Love the night? Reach for Zin After Dark, a limited cocktail-inspired series for those who get up when the sun goes down. Try Zin's Mojito, Spiced Cider, and Espresso Martini nicotine pouches. Find them at select retailers. Available while supplies last. Zin After Dark. Bring on the night. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Welcome back to the Swamp, my friends. It's good to see you made it back to another fun episode here in the Swamp. Today, we're going to be covering some absolutely terrifying outdoors horror stories that'll freak you out tonight. But before we do so, be sure you slap that like button, subscribe if you're new, and throw down some comments. And let's take a quick second to thank our sponsor for the holidays here. Hey, Swamp folk. Trust me, I totally feel everybody with how fast the holidays sneak up on everybody. But trust me, it's never too early or too late to get your shopping done, and actually have a good time doing it. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful, with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else on the internet, or even in stores around you. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade, or made in the US in general. Many are crafted by independent artists and small businesses alike, and because they're made in small batches, the best finds can sell out very quickly. I personally find all kinds of fun little knickknacks that make great stocking stuffers from this website. Uncommon Goods has literally been a godsend for me the past couple of years for gifts. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, from moms to dads to kids to teens, from book lovers to history buffs and diehard football fans to foodies, mixologists, and avid gardeners. You'll find thousands of new gift ideas that you won't find literally anywhere else. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting small artists, independent businesses, and up-and-coming creators in general. Many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches, so shop now before they're all. So shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list. Get 15% off your next gift. Go to uncommongoods.com/swamped. That's uncommongoods.com/swamped for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
1982, I was hired by a large consumer products company that had just opened a production plant in my area. It is still in production and has increased tremendously in size. The company hires several people at once and we all go through the same training and are classed, class 1, 2, 3, etc. I was in class 4, bringing the total people hired to around 200. So, small groups at a time. At that time, we worked 2 shifts 5 days a week and shut down on the weekend. Now, it is a 24/7 work schedule with about 1,200 employees. The building and warehouse was now a new build, out in the middle of nowhere, and had been farmland for many generations in the same family. In fact, the farmer had an agreement to still use parts of the land for hay production until such time the company needed the land for expansion. The warehouse was huge and tall. It had a rail track in the center to load the train cars in if needed. No racks at the time, just final product wrapped in stretch wrap and stacked on top of each other. The warehouse was marked with lines and numbered for the rows. There was a security guard that made the rounds every few hours, and always had to walk the warehouse. This is a story that was told to several of us by one of the security guards. For several nights, a figure had been seen in the warehouse, but none of the guards could get a good look at the figure, and it would go down one of the rows and get away. This was easy enough to do as the unit loads weren't up against the back wall. One night, one of the guards saw this figure and it appeared to be dressed in white. The plant has quality labs and they wear white coats. Thinking it was a lab person, the guard called out to the person to see why he was in the warehouse at 3 a.m. Remember, this place closed at 10:30 p.m. The figure didn't stop. The guard followed him in. The figure turned down one of the rows. The guard thought, okay, nowhere for this person to go. And when he got to the row, there was no one there. He turned around and saw the same figure about 200 feet away on the loading dock. Only now he could see the figure appeared to be transparent, and he could just faintly see through the figure. He went back to the guard office, spooked as hell. He didn't do any more rounds and quit in the morning. In an effort to make it easy to wash hands, automatic faucets were installed in the locker rooms and auto-flush toilets too. People reported that they would find the faucets going and the toilets flushing, and no one would be in the locker rooms or bathrooms. After having them checked out by a number of different plumbers and finding no issues, the phantom flushing continued to happen. The company had to disable the auto feature and go back to the old-fashioned way of washing hands and flushing toilets. I'm going to send you a story that personally happened to me in another email very soon. Thank you for sharing this story. When this unnatural and truly horrific story happened to me, I was just 17 years old and an arrogant male. I am 23 now and have never really told the full story to anyone, but I feel like submitting this will help me get this off my chest. Every summer, I always went to spend around 2 weeks of pure relaxation with my grandparents in East Central Arizona, in the middle of nowhere. Since I was 17, and this would be one of the last times I would venture out to see them for the summer, we decided to make the stay an unforgettable one. And trust me, this one was definitely unforgettable. So the first day I decided I was finally going to complete a very long trial next to our humble cabin. I had the whole day planned out, with stops for breakfast and lunch, and at the very end, make it back for supper. So I got ready for the hike, getting my knife, food, and other essentials, but the whole time the hair on the back of my neck was standing straight up. I had this feeling of dread for some reason, but I shrugged it off as a horrible sleep schedule. Once my things were packed, I said my goodbyes and left for the hike. As I stepped out of the house, the hot Arizona sun stung my skin, giving me nostalgia of my early years. I made it to the trail that I wanted to trial. Around 5 minutes later, as soon as I had made it to the cool forest, I felt uneasy, like nothing I have ever felt in my life. It was a mix of being watched and a feeling of butterflies in my stomach. This was weird, because I've lived my summer days in the forest and nothing like this has ever happened to me, but after around 45 seconds, it went away. Thoughts rushed through my mind about scary stories for the duration of the first part of the hike, which didn't help at this point, because I was spooked. Around 3 hours later, I found the clearing that I would always stop at, but this time, I would use it as a rest stop to eat. As I found some shade under one of the nearby trees and grabbed my sandwich and crackers, then I heard a twig snap from behind me. At the time, I was a well-built teen and not afraid of too much. But as soon as I called out, it was too late. I saw it. It was tall, skinny, but sort of built. It was freakishly tall, like around 9 or 10 feet tall. But the worst part was, it's dried, pale skin, long claws, and its head was like that of a deer, maybe even an elk. But the eyes... oh God, the eyes. These eyes were blood red and filled with hatred and sorrow. As soon as I spotted this figure, I ran like the wind. But it was no use. It was right behind me. Every step that beast took, it seemed to echo throughout the forest, deafening my ears. As I ran, I was starting to run short of breath, but this thing was not even tired. It didn't even seem to be breaking a sweat. I couldn't hear it panting or anything. But then after around 15 minutes later, I noticed this thing straight from the depths of hell was not chasing me anymore. Thoughts began to rush through my mind. Was that thing real? Am I crazy? Why me? Then, I heard my mom's voice. Ben! Ben! Are you there, honey? But it was hollow and off. There was no way it was my mom's voice, because she lived in Canada, and these were the woods of Arizona. I called back out, but I got no response. Then I called out again, and there was a voice, but one I will never forget. In a raspy, deep and demonic voice, it said,
"You better run!"
I bolted as fast as I could, my chest still burning from the run before that. I must have run for 45 minutes or more, with this brute right behind me. I was so deep in the forest that it would take at least 50 more minutes to get back to the trail and out of the forest, so I dove for a bush. I could hear the beast, with every step getting closer and closer. I could hear its deep breathing in and out, in and out. Then it yelled out, not in pain but in frustration, as it could not seemingly find me. Then it cried out. It sounded like 1,000 animals dying at once. It sent a shock through my body. Then it ran faster than I have ever seen, back to where this thing started. I really can't remember the rest of it. I remember opening the door and rushing into my room, sobbing. My grandparents got back home from their late lunch and saw me there, and they saw how shaken up I was. They asked what was wrong, and I told them I won't ever be coming back. That night I could hear voices outside of the house. I left to go back to Canada the very next day. I still don't know what that thing was. It looked like a mix of a Wendigo, or maybe even the Rake. I never told my grandparents the full story. All I told them was that I saw something weird in the woods, and I just needed to sleep. If you, or anyone, could tell me what this monster was, please comment down below.
Love the night? Reach for Zin After Dark, a limited cocktail-inspired series for those who get up when the sun goes down. Try Zin's Mojito, Spiced Cider, and Espresso Martini nicotine pouches. Find them at select retailers, available while supplies last. Zin After Dark. Bring on the night. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
I'm a 17-year-old male growing up in a small city in southwestern Arizona. The city of about 50,000 has little to nothing to do. My childhood was playing outside, my early teens was mostly just staying inside playing games, and now, I smoke weed, drive around the city with friends looking for trouble, but I see it as living my best life in this sorry-ass town. Now that you got some background, here's the story. This event happened a little over 2 months ago, so October. It was me, my girlfriend, and my two best friends, L and J, and their girlfriends T and M. Six people. Remember, that'll be important later on. All six of us decided to go to Ramsey Canyon to smoke, drink, and overall party to celebrate M's birthday. I was excited about the night to come because school was kicking my ass, and to be honest, I needed a break. The night came, and it was time to go have an awesome night. Or so I thought. I went and picked up A first, then L and T in my car. which is a 2006 RWD WRX with the 1JZ engine swap that me and my dad built over the summer. I know most of you listening don't care, but it's important later on. After about a 30-minute drive to Ramsey Canyon, we meet J&M at the parking lot, then we hike about a mile to the spot, and we start to party as the night goes on, and everyone is having a good time. I smoke a blunt, and then I realize I'm getting noticeably high, but my girlfriend, who was doing shots non-stop, also decided to stop, because me and her made the choice to not get fucked up and be somewhat responsible. At this point, it's about 8 p.m, and everyone came to the chill-out point, and we sat around the fire and smoked one blunt after another, hopefully sobering up before we take everyone home. Now at this point, I felt the feeling of being watched. I'm not easily intimidated before I moved out to Arizona. I'm from a bad gang area in Central Texas where I've been robbed at gun and knife point multiple times, so it takes a lot to scare me. But this feeling felt so mean and hateful. Like whatever was looking at me wanted to hurt me, and it chilled me to the bone. I tried to shake it off as it was my turn to hit the blunt. About mid-smoke sesh, all the girls decided they had to use the bathroom, which made me feel better because I didn't want anyone going off by themselves. I decided to do a quick head count to make me feel better instead of being paranoid. I counted all the girls, me, and then Jay. I spoke out, "Wait, where's L?" And T said he went back to the car because he realized he left his phone and went to go get it about 10 minutes ago. Then all the girls walked off to use the bathroom. I look at Jay and say, hey man, are you getting the feeling of being watched?" And Jay kind of shouted out of excitement and then quieted down. Yeah, I swear about 10 minutes ago I heard my name call from over there and I haven't been able to shake this weird feeling of dread till the girls left. The weird thing is M never left the group nor our little clearing. She's the birthday girl and I would have noticed. Then about 10 minutes later, the girls come running back crying and T had a cut on her arm. I went from high to sober really quick and immediately went to T's aid and asked what had happened. From what I can understand, after they were done using the bathroom, they wanted to wander around for a little before coming back. And when they came upon an observation point of the whole city, M&A wanted a picture, and after about 5 minutes of pictures, M&A's face went cold, and were staring daggers right behind T. T, of course, reacts and turns around to see an 8-foot-tall thing, 2 feet from her. It had deer legs and razor-like 5-inch nails attached to long fingers, and bony hands with the red ooze dripping out of the right hand. T, too terrified to look up, reacts in a way I think and know saved her life. Quickly raised her phone to take a picture, but not to show her friends later on, because the flash was on, and as soon as the flash went off, the creature grunted in anger, and T yelled, "Run!" The girls took off towards the fire, and as T started to sprint, the thing clawed at her trying to grab her, but missed and ended up slicing through her long sleeve and hoodie, like a hot knife through butter. Hearing T's story, I was perplexed. What T just explained sounded like a Wendigo or a skinwalker encounter. I'm Hispanic and African American, so I'm no stranger to folklore. After cleaning up and addressing T's cut, I looked over to see M still crying her eyes out in J's arm, and A chain-smoking cigarettes by the fire. I went over to her and asked if she was alright, and what she said she saw scared the hell out of me. She said the face was the worst part. It had a deer skull with 10-point antlers, with red eyes. The eyes looked like she was looking straight into hell. The mouth had so many razor-like teeth with meat hanging off the chest and neck. When she looked back at the face, she said it smiled and started talking to her telepathically. It was telling her terrible things such as no one loves her and that she would kill herself, and she got choked up and then started crying again. It took me an hour to calm her down and we were all just sitting there in silence when I jumped up and yelled, "Hell, where's Hell?" Me and Jay started yelling Hell's name at the top of our lungs and I came up with the best idea I could think of at the time. I told the whole group, "Get your shit together and we're leaving now." And I pointed at Jay that we were going to get the girls in the cars and going to look for L. Got it? He said got it, and we packed all of our stuff and made it to the cars in record time. We made sure the girls were okay in my car, so if they needed, they can get out of there quickly. Me and Jay ran into the forest looking for our dear friend L. Jay had my knife I always carried, and I had my grandfather's M1911 ACP-45 with hollow points, just in case we saw some mountain lions up where we were. I'm no stranger to guns, so I kept it in my waistline and told myself I'll only take it out if I need it. After about 30 minutes of searching, and me and Jay just stopped to take a breather. About a minute in, I hear leaves crunch under a heavy footstep. I reacted quickly, and within a fifth of a second, I draw my weapon and pointed it in the direction of the sound, and pulled the hammer back ready to defend me and Jay. It was L. I lowered my weapon and rushed over to him, hugging him, thanking God he's okay. Then I slapped him and started cursing him out and yelled, "Where the hell have you been?" Jay said, "E, calm down, man, look at him. He looks like he saw a ghost." I looked at him and yeah, he looks like hell. El said when he was walking back to the car, he got lost and took a second to see if he could hear us and make his way back. As he strained his ears and he heard his name being called in a deep, demonic, raspy voice, he looked over and saw the exact same thing the girls did. He didn't waste any time and took off in a random direction. Now, L is a big guy. He could very well play football as a lineman and get a D1 scholarship without even trying. He said as he was running, the monster was maybe 10 to 20 feet behind him, saying in the same voice,
"L, come here. L, come here."
Eventually, L came across a cave thing that dipped around into a valley, so L jumped in, praying to God the creature would run by him. The thing stopped right above him, trying to smell for him, he assumed. But luckily, he was near a river, so the sound of the water masked his breathing and the scent. The creature scuffed in anger and ran off, and L said he was going to wait for about 20 minutes to make sure it was really gone, and not waiting him out. He ended up passing out from exhaustion, and the adrenaline started to stop pumping in his blood. He woke up to us breathing heavily near him. He asked where the girls were, and Jay was about to speak, and I shushed them. I signed to them, "Do you hear that?" They both said no, and then they realized what I meant when we got into a defensive position. I don't know a lot about the woods, but I know this. If the animals are quiet around you, that means they're scared of something more dangerous than you. About 10 feet from us to the left, I heard A's voice say,
"Baby, I'm scared. I want to go home."
I look over fully expecting to see my girlfriend, but my heart jumped straight to my throat, and I got choked up, because now I'm seeing this unholy abomination. L and Jay took off, and I don't blame them. It took another step, and it spoke to me in that voice that would scare a Navy SEAL, and said,
"You're going to die here."
It took another step and smiled. I straightened up and put on my best face of the, "If you want to kill me, you're going to have a hell of a fight" face, and the smell of the creature got whipped off. I pulled the pistol out and pointed it right at the thing, and I heard a growl come from it. And I started saying a prayer in Latin that I learned from my great-grandfather, if I was ever in danger. Observe, Petrum, Defendant. Amen. Then I fired all 8 rounds into the creature, 3 hits in the head, and then the rest landed center mass. It roared in pain and anger, and I ran, and then I heard the creature following me. I did the 30-minute hike in 10. As soon as I came hauling ass down the trail, L and Jay hopped in Jay's car and floored it down the mountain. I jumped into the car, and as I looked back, I saw the thing running after me. At this point, the girls were crying for me to go, and that's what I did. I started the car and threw it into second gear, and launched the car down after Jay and L. The speeding limit was 25, and I was doing 50 to 60, drifting corners and not taking any chances slowing down, and as soon as I hit the straightaway, I pulled the pedal to the metal, easily passing Jay and L, doing 100 miles per hour, not slowing down till I took the SR-92, and then I was doing 5 over the speed limit. I saw McDonald's, so I stopped so I can throw up the evening of junk food. I got back in the car and A asked if I was okay. I just gave her a look, then started the car and drove all of us to my house so we can sleep off the night that just unfolded. J and M slept on the couch, L and T slept in the guest bedroom, and me and A went to my room. I made sure the door was locked 5 times before laying down. She fell asleep crying in my arms. As for me, I didn't sleep. As soon as the sunlight peeked over the mountain, I went outside to see if my car was damaged, to see L and Jay already out there looking at my car. Nothing was wrong except it was a little dusty, but then I looked at the back windshield, and there was a huge bloody handprint. You can believe this story or not, but if you plan to go to Ramsey Canyon in Sierra Vista, Arizona, bring a firearm at least.
This is a creepy ghost story that happened to me when I was just a young boy. When I was a kid, I used to live at my grandparents' house in Riverside, California. My grandma's house was a big ranch-style home out in the country. My family had always experienced paranormal and sometimes poltergeist activity. It all started when I was 5. I would always wake up in the middle of the night and see this ghost, or maybe a shadow of a little boy. Keep in mind, demons are known to appear as children. I would see this shadow standing at the doorway of my bedroom and sometimes in the living room. I've woken up with 3 scratches on my back multiple times. We would hear voices and footsteps. Fast forward 3 years, my cousin moved in. One night he explained how he awoke with his bed shaking and levitating. He's heard scratches on the door some nights. I think the scariest experience my family had in that house was one summer night in July. My cousin was exiting the restroom when he noticed his sister at the end of the hallway. The strange thing is, his sister was in the other room watching a movie, so what he saw was not his sister. He saw the figure walk off and disappear before his very eyes. The next day, my cousin left to run some errands. I was not aware he had left. I awoke and prepared myself breakfast. I walked over to my cousin's bedroom to ask him if he would like some breakfast. His door was shut. I knocked and asked him if he was, ready for breakfast. There was silence for like 3 seconds or so, when I heard a soft response. "No, thank you." I said okay, and asked if I could come in. I heard a soft, "Yes." I slowly entered, only to see my cousin was not in his room. I freaked out and ran outside. Several nights went by, hearing voices and footsteps and seeing shadows. One stormy night, I awoke at 3 a.m. to hearing what sounded like something really heavy being dragged on the roof, only to find out it was hard scratching at my door. I started to hyperventilate. I was freaked the heck out. The scratching stopped after 2 minutes, and there was nothing but silence that followed it. The house was quiet for the next couple of nights. The last terrifying experience I can remember was on a cold winter night. Me and my cousin and my sister were watching a horror film. About an hour into the movie, I noticed a light through the sliding glass door that leads to the backyard. This orb of light suddenly appeared at the window above the sliding glass door. At the time, we had a dog that started to ferociously bark. He was freaking out and was furious. When all of a sudden, it just disappeared. As soon as it did disappear, we heard a deep, low-pitched snarl. We freaked out and I called my dad. My dad attempted to bless the house, which seemed to have worked for a while. Nothing happened after that night, and my family has never experienced anything like this again. This house is the reason I have a phobia of the darkness. I'm 20 years old now, and live in my own apartment at this point. I do visit that house to see my grandparents sometimes, but when I do, I refuse to sleep alone. I still to this day get bad vibes being in that house. Thanks for sharing this story, and remember, before purchasing a house, it's best to get a priest for a blessing, just in case. I've always lived in a small town, mostly farmlands in Pennsylvania. Being such a small little community, there's not much that goes on without everyone knowing in a few days' time. There isn't much crime, but sadly, more drugs than you could imagine. Which is where my story starts. My husband lived in the middle of our little town growing up with a neighbor whom we would go on fishing trips with. This man's name was Glenn. He lived directly across from them on the borders of the local middle school and elementary. Glenn remained to live in the same house when my husband grew up and moved out of the nest. Over the years, Glenn had a friend named Mike that spent almost every single day with him. They started out as drinking buddies and began experimenting with other drugs together. Now, sadly, when they got on a certain level, they would begin to fight. Mike was white, redneck, and Glenn was an African American. When they got to this level, they would scream racist things at each other. Finally, one night, Glenn had enough and took a big, thick ashtray and smashed Mike over the head. When he hit the floor, Glenn grabbed a sword, yes, of all things, a sword, and stabbed him quite a few times. After a while, he took Mike's body and put it underneath his back porch. First, he made a shallow grave and left him there. After a week's time went by, Glenn started becoming harder and harder into booze and drugs. He claimed to people he was seeing Mike's spirit come to him, which at the time, no one knew that Mike had even died, though maybe he was on a binge of something. Mike was apparently coming to him and telling him to move his body and treating Glenn horribly. This would go on for weeks and weeks, and the people who claimed to have seen Glenn noticed he was going downhill and fast. One afternoon, I was on my way to a store and noticed a ton of cop cars, ambulances, and fire trucks. I became panicked and stopped to check to make sure everybody was okay. I came inside and found my mother-in-law at the window staring out. I asked her what was going on, and she said to me, 2 days ago, there was this horrible smell all around the block and no one could figure out what it was. We looked around for any dead animals and called to complain. Turns out, when the smell started, the cops followed it back to Glenn's porch. Glenn finally did as Mike Spira asked, and he dug up the body and put it deeper in the ground and possibly elsewhere. When the cops came knocking, he confessed right then and there. Maybe it was too much stress for him to carry on, but he went to jail and they took days climbing over the property. My husband was stunned someone he spent so much of his teen years with could do something like that. I believe he got 20 plus years in jail. It should have been more, but you know how the system works. It has to have been one of the most craziest things to happen in our little town as well. It really rocked the core of it for a while. The house has stood empty for years. Everyone that knew would not take that place. Hopefully, Mike's spirit passed on after he got justice. Alright, here's some context. Back in September, I was taking Hunter Ed class with my dad. Basically, you learn parts of a gun, how to handle a gun safely, etc. Since it was in person and not the online classes, the instructors had stories to tell. These were about people not handling guns correctly, drunk shooting, etc. And most of them, they didn't end well. We were shooting a lot those 2 weeks to prepare for the test at the end. One time, we went to an abandoned town that a lot of people shot at. It had been shut down due to high lead levels. I had butterflies the whole ride, but I brushed it off as just nerves. Mistake number one. That evening, we were the only ones there. We thought it would be pretty nice, since there'd be more spots open. Keyword, thought. We settled on a spot behind a hill and shot at another hill nearby. My dad was sighting the .22 gun we had just brought, and I was sitting behind him. My earplugs were in, so it was hard to hear things, especially far away. All of a sudden, there was a very loud shot. It had to have been my dad, since I was close to him. Initially, I was scared as the aforementioned stories that were told of shots being accidentally fired didn't end well. In a concerned voice, I asked my dad if he had just shot. When he said no, my fear became much greater. Another shot was fired, and our only thought was, what the heck? We quickly tried to become seen. We quickly unloaded the gun so it was safe and ran up the hill. Mistake number two. My mom was wearing bright yellow, and we were all jumping up and down, waving our arms. There was no way we couldn't be seen. After two or three more shots, we ran to the edge. It was like a valley or a dried-out lake or something. The edges were very high. We were at the bottom, and the shooter was at the top. The next part confirmed our belief that he had seen us, and still continued to shoot. My dad called the police to report what was happening. He walked further out to see details like the color of the truck, how many people, etc. Just a bit after my dad got on the phone, the guy left, probably assuming the cops or other authorities were called. We wish we had brought the gun, because we were convinced he was shooting at us. We stayed there for what seemed like forever. We had to wait for the police, and a group of maybe four high schoolers came. My dad went and warned them about the previous events, and we decided after 15 minutes of waiting and no police arriving that we wanted to get out of there. We went and gathered our stuff, and I looked at where the shots had come from and where they had went. The shots were no more than 25 meters away from where we had been. If he had bumped these guns just a bit, we would have been dead or in the hospital. Driving away, the police finally came. They asked us some questions, and we were finally able to get the crap out of there. He was unfortunately never caught, and we fortunately never went back there. We don't know if he was trying to mess with us, kill us, shoot us, or was just drunk, but we were terrified.
Love the night? Reach for Zin After Dark, a limited cocktail-inspired series for those who get up when the sun goes down. Try Zin's Mojito, Spiced Cider, and Espresso Martini nicotine pouches. Find them at select retailers. Available while supplies last. Zin After Dark. Bring on the night.
Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify has got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
The Garland Woods. A beautiful and still monument to what Mother Nature can accomplish if left unchecked. It's one of those places where just merely being there has the potential to inspire greatness in you. During the day, as the god rays comb through the densely packed trees, you'll find a magnitude of artists and great thinkers alike soaking up the inspiration. Inspiration is why I made my journey into the Garland Woods, but what I wanted to find there was an idea for a truly great horror story. As the sun fades past the horizon and the vibrant greens turn muddy, you'll notice the crowd dispersing. Plastered around the woods are signs that warn visitors not to stay after the sun has left. I thought this was silly. It was the same cliche rule that was applied to every graveyard and abandoned home. The woods were beautiful, and so in that sense it felt like a magical place, but I never believed magic to be real. All the signs posted around didn't state that there would be any legal ramifications for staying after dark, so I gathered what I needed and waited. Instead of soaking in the inspiration that the light of the day was offering, I people-watched. I watched as an artist sat on the large extensions of an ancient tree and sketched away. Poets stood like statues in the paths of light that switched around the trees, like their ideas were solar-powered. Garland was largely untouched by man-made machines. The only unnatural part of the park was the parking lot, but even that was just compacted dirt. Legends, as they were, posed that the forest was protected by magic that halted crews from working after the sun had gone down. Stories of workers being assaulted and equipment being tampered with ran rampant in nearby towns. As I watched people carrying on, watched the hikers, artists, and the occasional businessman, the sun started to retreat. The woods were dense and it took me a while to find anything I would consider a clearing. As I was running out of light, however, I found a small patch of dirt surrounded by a circle of rocks that would fit my supplies just fine. The light diminished and I could hear a marathon of retreating footsteps. I thought someone would stop and bother me, but they all carried on, like the forest itself was ushering them out. After a few moments had passed, the world around me became muted, and the forest took on a life outside of human interaction, like it had been wearing a mask all day, and was free to finally slip it off. The trees were cast in the shadows, and the ground became a plush dark. Initially, the rumors were hard to pry from my thoughts. I wondered what manner of beast or psycho would infiltrate my campsite. In such a still and intimate environment, I think the woods were able to feel my worry and responded with a new light. From the dark plush, I watched a wave of small scattered dots of light breathe into existence. The army-sized collection of fireflies began lifting up from the grass and populating the air. A few even drifted closer to me, and the fire I had begun with whatever already broken branches I could find. I was sure to pour water around the fire just to make sure that it wouldn't spread. I might not have believed in magic, but I had no intention of burning it down either. The night was a cold one, but with the tent overhead and the pulses of heat from the fire, I was able to get pretty comfortable. And so I pulled out my notebook. The tight-lipped calls of the indigenous animals accompanied scratches of charcoal dragging across the paper. Every time I looked up to observe the dance of the fireflies, I would notice less of them had stuck around. I must have completely lost track of time. Whatever the other artists felt during the day, I was feeling it all the same in the dark. My mind raced with formations of monsters and inescapable situations. Creative deaths and meaningful escapes plagued every crevice of my mind as the pencil whittled closer to its eraser. My first touch of uncertainty came when I took a break to take a few bites of an energy bar I had brought with me. Looking out, where there was once a stadium's worth of fireflies, there was only a handful, and they were all in the distance. It looked like the bugs were trying to hide behind the trees, and as I twisted my head, it became clear. I thought it was just a product of the horde dispersing with the trees. A sort of unnerving optical illusion was created. Even as I got back to writing, I couldn't help but shift my gaze from the paper back to the woods. The lights were unchanging. They continued to hang in the same spot and were in a unified formation, almost creating a ring around me. Over time, the ideas that were in my head, the horrors I myself had imagined, started to feel like they were breathing down my neck. The subtle notion of my isolation from another human soul started to invade my thoughts. What were once ideas of eldritch gods became themes of loneliness and the unending darkness. I decided I had enough ideas written down when I noticed that I was fighting to keep my hand still as it moved across the paper. Uncertain anxiety had invaded my situation with the dying of my fire. I was ready to get to sleep and let the morning come. Closing the notebook, I stood up and prepared to douse the fire. But the lights, they were much closer. I was so focused on what was inside my head that for a few moments, I completely disregarded the woods. When the flock of fireflies lifted from the ground, every time I took my eyes off them and then returned to look at them, I assumed it was the same light. I couldn't have measured how much time had passed between glances, and I never heard anything like the rustling of animals, but still my assumption about the lights, I was wrong. If it wasn't for the diminishing flames that emitted a soft orange glow, I would have assumed the fireflies had just returned. But the figures the glow was cast onto were no bugs. All around me were stout and plump dark bodies. Their only defining feature was the bright yellow lantern-like eyes held in place by bulbous heads. My previous sense of anxiety was heightened as I watched small creatures walking closer to me. When they were close enough, I could see the parts of their bodies sported a protrusion of what looked like branches. Their bodies were so varied and lacking any form that it looked as though they had been formed of the forest floor and given life. I was completely surrounded by them, with no path to escape when their advance finally halted. Looking down, I noticed, what little light was left, that they had all stopped just outside the stone circle. Not a single one of the firefly children made an attempt to cross the stones. They all stood there and looked towards me. Then a low humming noise came from all sides. The children started to undulate in a noise like flies next to your ear was produced. The noise was obnoxious, but I figured that as long as I stayed in the circle, they wouldn't be able to get to me. I thought of the legends. The tales I had heard about how they had found a crew of lumberjacks, dismembered, and pinned to trees. How anyone who was reported to stay in the forest after dark went missing or was found dead the next morning. I thought of the stories I had crafted in my head that night of all the terrible ways a person could perish. I worried I would discover much worse ways to die firsthand. Then, there was a hiss. A sharp and new noise that sounded like fat burning on the stove came from inside the circle. I looked down at the fire and saw a thin shadow reaching into the circle towards my fire and stopping when it reached the brighter portion, where it produced the hiss. It retched from the fire, or maybe it was just the light. The fire, though, was fading, The Firefly children couldn't pass through the rocks, so I was worried the shadow was something else entirely. My suspicions were confirmed with the death of the fire. I faintly watched several shadows slip past the rocks. My only defense had been completely penetrated, and I was without an option of retaliation. The shadows ignored the fire and headed directly towards me. One of the shadows brushed against a rogue twig and pushed it aside. The tendrils reaching into my circle were moving physical objects, which meant they were able to touch me. I pictured them grabbing my ankles and dragging me into the dirt. Then, the spikes of darkness halted once more, and I heard the same hissing noise as before. The tendrils were bathed in bright yellow light. Not wanting to take my eyes off the tendril, but needing to see the source, I shifted my gaze. To the right of one of the Firefly children's eyes were glowing much brighter and casting a beam onto the ground, like a spotlight. The beam followed the tendrils and chased them out of the circle. It was with this bright light I was able to notice that the darkness that invaded my campsite was also all around me. Much darker than the woods where I could see the formations of darkness swirling up nearby trees and covering the ground. Like the entirety of the dark was reaching out for me, but every time it got close, one of the children would cast a light and push it back. Helpless, I watched as the children created a light show to keep the darkness from reaching me. Miniature solar flares shooing away the bleak. Even as the light of my fire was completely snuffed out, they continued their watch and it became clear. If it wasn't for the children, I would have been dead where I stood. Something about them, like a quiet whisper, was comforting to me. I had done my best to respect the woods when I arrived, and I think maybe it saved my life. Hours passed and my feet began aching like I was standing on needles as I thought I would pass out. A beam of light washed over me. A soft and natural light started to cover the soil and started reaching up the trees. I watched the rays from the sun pressure the darkness that was reaching towards me. It retreated with a clearly irritated hiss, much louder than the others. With the vanishing of the darkness, so did the children begin to fade, seemingly all at once. The crack of light swallowed the forest, and where the children once stood, there was a small array of fireflies dancing in the light. They swirled in the air for a moment before returning to the grass around me, vanishing completely. I stood and reflected on the night. I don't know if I believe what I saw was magic. I collected my thoughts and my supplies. I wasn't in a rush or anything, and I wanted to stay, but something told me I had gotten all I needed. My notebook was stuffed to the brim with ideas, and I had been handed what might be the best one yet. Leaving the stone circle felt heavy, like I was stepping out into an ocean, but the feeling leveled out as I made my way out of the woods. Already several people were passing by me, looking for their daily dose of magic. But magic is a trick. What's in those woods was there far before the time of humans. It's primordial. Magic is a blink, and you'll miss it in a moment. A brief and wonderful period of time where anything is possible. I went to Nebraska National Forest every long weekend with two friends who I'll call Haley and Todd. I have known them for years and we would never hike alone because of the risk. So, we became a group. Anyways, it was spring last year when we went on a week-long backpacking trip. It was a 7-hour drive there. I, being 14, couldn't drive, but Haley was 16 and Todd was 15. Haley drove us there, and we had a great time for the first few hours of the drive. But when we got closer to the forest, something felt off. I know it sounds cliche, but I had this feeling like I was going to get sick. I tried to ignore it at first, and thought I was just nervous. So Haley and Todd, I guess, noticed that I was acting off. They asked me what was up, and when I told them something wasn't right, they laughed, thinking I was trying to scare them. A few hours later, the feeling is still there, but we are on a trailhead now. I got out, and everything was as it should be. We grabbed our packs and off we went. I felt like I was at home in the trees, and the feeling was soon forgotten. We walked a little over 5 miles that day before we set up camp. We had a two-person tent that Haley and I brought, and then a hammock that Todd had brought. After we set up camp, ate, and were just chilling by the fire, there wasn't any alcohol or drugs involved, we were just talking. Todd began complaining about how he didn't want to sleep in his hammock. I didn't want to listen to him complaining and offered to switch places. He gladly accepted. So the night went on as usual. Around 2 a.m., when we all got tired and went to bed, well, everyone but me. I have extremely bad insomnia, so I was just mending to the fire and chilling. Finally, I decided that I would get in the hammock and just try to read or something. So I put out the fire, grabbed my headlamp, and got into the hammock. I noticed that something was off, but I just couldn't place what it was. That's when it hit me. It was completely silent in the woods. No crickets, no animals, nothing. My skin started to crawl. Something was off. I turned out my headlamp and laid and kept silent. I wanted to try and hear some type of animal to ease my worries. That's when I heard it. Something was dragging against the tent. I wasn't even 5 feet from the tent and it freaked me out. I did something really stupid. I called out my friends' names, and the noise stopped. I got no answer, but this feeling of dread was something I haven't ever felt before, or since. That's when I felt it. Something poked the hammock. It wasn't like a soft poke. It was like a jab. I was horrified, to be honest. What the hell had just touched me, and where the hell was it? I was frozen. I suffered from anxiety and I felt the panic rising in me. I couldn't understand what was going on. That's when I made another mistake. I decided to see what wanted to jab me. All this happened within seconds. I reached up and clicked on my light. That's when I saw it. It's like something straight out of nightmares. There was a creature about 4 feet above me staring at me, kind of hunched over. I was about 3 feet off the ground, so this thing was probably 7 or 8 feet tall. It looked like a dog, but it also didn't. It had the face of a wolf, but in a human type of way. The eyes looked red, and the ears looked clipped like a pit bull's. Its mouth pulled back in a snarl, and a hand, or claw, paw, whatever you want to call it, blocking its face. I was absolutely terrified. Its teeth were huge and sharp. The paws, if you could even call them that, had 5-finger-type things with sharp, long claws on them. They looked like they could tear me apart. I stared at this thing for what felt like hours, but was only probably 5 seconds. That's when I screamed bloody murder. As soon as I did, this thing let out something between a scream and a howl. It was deep and I could feel it. That's when I heard Todd yell, "What the heck was that?" I heard the tent opening, and that's when the creature and I finally broke eye contact. I yelled at Haley and Todd to help me. I looked back and this thing was climbing the freaking tree. It was still staring at me. That's when I saw the back of it. It had the tail of a dog. Grayish, silver fur. A black mane down its back. And a hump. I took this opportunity to scramble out of my hammock. We took off without grabbing anything. I had no shoes or anything. We made it to the car, but the whole time back I heard something in the trees. The next day we had park rangers go get our stuff because we were so freaked out. When they got there, everything was gone. Not even trash remained. It was as if we were never there. They blamed us for lying. We have no idea what happened, and I had no idea what I saw or why it didn't just kill me. I haven't been back in the woods for a very long time, but every time I close my eyes, I still see that thing and hear its roar. When I was 16, almost 5 years ago, I was camping for the weekend in the Allegheny National Forest in Pennsylvania with my dad. It was an annual tradition that he and I had visiting the Zippo Museum and the Kinzua Dam. Our first night there was going normally. My dad and I were talking and burning various things in our fire pit. At around 11:30 p.m., my dad told me he was going to bed, so he got up and went into his tent across from mine. I kept adding wood to the fire and decided to stay up. 45 minutes after my dad went to sleep, it got unnaturally cold. It was late June, but it felt like November. Then I saw in the trees outside of our campsite, two glowing yellow eyes that stood about 8 feet off the ground if I had to guess. In the brief moment that I was able to shine my flashlight into the woods, I saw that this thing was tall, lanky, and had an awkward body. It dashed into the darkness, and I could no longer see it. It was no longer cold when it left as well. Less than 5 minutes later, I could hear traditional Native American music off in the distance. I heard a few drums and a flute. I quickly got into my own tent and crawled into my sleeping bag. I eventually fell asleep and our camping trip continued without incident. I'm not sure if my dad believed me when I told him the next morning while we made breakfast, but I know what I saw. It might not be the creepiest story that you've ever shared, but to me in that moment, it was incredibly eerie. If anybody has ever heard of anything like this, please comment down below. I would love to know what this was.
Love the night? Reach for Zin After Dark, a limited cocktail-inspired series for those who get up when the sun goes down. Try Zin's Mojito, Spiced Cider, and Espresso Martini nicotine pouches. Find them at select retailers, available while supplies last. Zin After Dark. Bring on the night. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
My name is Amanda. I'm a 28-year-old Hispanic female, and I was born and raised in Southern California in a small town called Paris. It's a small sort of ghetto area, but it was home. We lived in the nicest house on our street, but because of how bad the area got over the years, I had to get a wrought iron fence eventually, and bars on all the windows, and 2 German Shepherds just in case. To be honest, my mom and I used to think my dad was way too paranoid. Growing up, I used to walk up and down the streets of my hometown with my friends, and even though it wasn't the best area, nothing ever happened to me, and nothing ever made me feel unsafe. Until this happened. My dad had enough of living in the ghetto, and my parents had been wanting to move for years. Finally, my dad found a job in Arizona where my uncle lived, so he left for Arizona to temporarily live with my uncle to start his job and house search for us, while me, my mom, and my sisters stayed behind to pack everything in boxes. I only had a couple of months to get everything in order. But when I found the time, I wanted to hang out with some friends before I left California. The night this happened, I was planning to hang out with my ex-boyfriend. Let's call him Freddy. We were both kind of broke, so we just grabbed a couple of Arizona iced teas from the gas station and went to hang out at a small park in town. Keep in mind, it was about 8 or 9 at night and it was very dark. But I had grown up going to the park and had been there so many times that I didn't really see a problem with it at the time. A big, dumb mistake on my end. When we got there, I decided just in case to leave my wallet in my purse and tuck it under my seat. I thought I was smart, and we grabbed our drinks and started to walk around the big grassy area. We were just talking and showing each other funny pictures from our phone. There were some people when we first got there, but not even 15 minutes passed and it seemed like everyone had just vanished. First red flag. We also passed by a suspicious looking guy with his dog sitting at a bench like he was waiting for someone, who also whistled when we passed by. Another red flag that I stupidly ignored. Freddy and I started sitting at a small hill behind the restroom, still continuing our conversation about God knows what, when all of a sudden I heard some footsteps approaching the left of us. That's when everything happened. It was all so fast. I remember looking up and seeing four Latino guys with bald heads, and if I had to guess, they all could have been older than 20. One ran up to Freddy and yelled, "Hey, where you from, S.A.?" Freddy's response was, "What?" But before the guy could ask again, Freddy just jumped up and ran. Just the one guy chased after him. And yes, he left me there alone, with the three remaining guys staring at me. I have never felt more fear in my entire life. So scared that my legs felt too heavy to move, and I knew that these guys could catch me. Then, the one who looked like he was the youngest approached me with a long knife in his hand and pressed it against my stomach. Not enough to puncture, but enough to hurt. He also kept one hand on my shoulder, I guess to make sure I couldn't even think about moving or trying anything. My phone was kind of small at the time, but it was so dark that luckily I was able to slip it into my sleeve while they weren't looking, and hopefully be able to dial 911. "Give me everything you got, girl. Empty your pockets now," he said to me. I remember thinking he was trying to convince me and the guys behind him how tough he was, but he just wasn't tough, you know? He didn't seem very tough anyway. I put both my hands up and said I didn't have anything, I swear, please. He looked back at the other guy and back at me, and that's when I started to cry. I started to pray, "Please God, I just want to see my mom again, please." Then he said, "Pull that stuff out of your pockets, now." I pulled out my car keys and a $1 bill, and for some reason, got either brave or stupid and said, "See, like I said, I have nothing." Again, he looked back at his friends, and they were really getting impatient and nervous. That's when it hit me. Oh my God, this is a gang initiation. God help me. He then said, "I know you've got a phone, so give it." Again, I put my hands up and told him, "I don't have it on me. You can check if you want." Stupid, I know, but I thought if I told him that he would believe me. He didn't, so he checked my pockets of my sweater, and I kept thinking, oh my God, if my phone rings, these guys are definitely going to kill me. Finally, the guy who was chasing Freddy ran back, but no Freddy. I'm guessing that was their signal to get the hell out of there, because all of a sudden the guy grabs my keys and the $1 bill, gives me a shove, and they all took off running, scattering in different directions out of the park. I'm guessing as planned. Still in shock that I was alive and had not been stabbed to death or worse, I stood there for another 2 or 3 minutes looking around to make sure they were gone. Not knowing what the hell happened to Freddy, and angry as hell that he betrayed and left me, I finally felt like I could move and start running again. Crying, breathing hard, feeling like I was going to pass out from all the shock. I found a lit area of picnic benches where I sat, and all of a sudden I heard Freddy call my name and run to me. I wanted to slap the hell out of his face, but for some reason was glad he was alive. Looking back now, I have no idea why I gave a crap. I pulled out my phone and called the police, and called AAA because my keys had been stolen, and my mom didn't know where the spare key was. The cops took my statement, and I distinctly remember how the cop looked at Freddy in disgust when he heard that he had left me. They never found the guys, but the keys were replaceable, and the $1 bill was a small cost to pay for my life. I had nightmares for weeks, and sometimes I still have them. I sometimes get stomach pains in that same spot where the guy pushed a knife to me. This was a traumatizing experience that made me very, very paranoid as a person. I have since moved out of California, and now live in another state with my husband for 4 years. I have developed a habit of checking and rechecking the locks on my doors and my car. I'm constantly looking behind me and have had panic attacks because I always think I'm being followed, even though the town I live in is very safe. Freddie and I didn't talk for years, but he has since apologized to me and admitted to being scared, which is, you know, it does mean a lot, and it is tough for a guy to admit. He now has a family of his own, and we have remained friends on Facebook, but we don't talk very often. What I learned from this experience is to not ignore the red flags and to never, ever hang out in parks at night. About 5 years ago, I and my older sister went to a nature park, a wetland, so to speak. Of course, we went at night so we could skateboard around because you weren't allowed to. But you know, a 14-year-old trying to look cool in front of her 24-year-old sister is not too uncommon, I guess. Well, we went just around as the sun was setting. For a little bit, we got lost since the park was so big and condensed with thick woods. We were trying to find the bridge, a 20-foot or so bridge so we could hang out just above the rushing river. By the time we got there, the sun was hardly visible over the mountains. I looked around after drinking my water, and here is where the creepy stuff happened. As I looked at the other side of the bridge, I saw a tall, skinny figure. I first shrugged it off like it was a person, maybe a ranger of the park. But then, it got on all fours and walked away. I didn't say anything at first, mainly because I thought it was mainly probably a bear or something. I looked back at my sister as we chatted about the boys and all the other things that we would chat about. Then I looked back at the end of the bridge. My sister did too, and we both saw the figure. This time, we both had known that we had seen it, so we couldn't be crazy. At this point, I had totally freaked out. Mind you, it's still not dark out and the sky was purple and orange, so it wasn't like we were seeing things, like when your mind pictures figures in the dark. No, it was right there and getting closer. I told my sister to get the heck out of here. Her going first off the bridge and down the hill. I went second. And as I turned to look at the bridge again, it was 5 feet in front of me on all fours again. It stood there as me and my sister skated off. This isn't the end, unfortunately. I told my sister to head to the main building since there are cameras and lots of light. We skateboarded for what seemed like hours. Every minute seemed to last an eternity. As we finally get to the main building, we finally stop riding our boards. Out of breath and scared, we both looked around. By this time, it was pitch black outside and we could barely see anything. We made a dash to the car, taking a path we have never seen before. But it was outside the park, which made us feel safer. After we got to my sister's Jeep, we both got in, hearts racing and scared out of our minds. We had been trying to leave the gate, but it was locked. Meaning, we couldn't leave since there was only one way in and out of the park. We got even more scared. We tried everything to get out. We thought about just leaving the car and walking home, but we drove onto the sidewalk and eventually found a way to bypass everything. To this day, I won't go back to those wetlands ever again, even in daylight. Whatever that thing was, I never want to see it again. I can't stop thinking about it. I'm almost 19 now. You can think whatever you want about this story, but it really did happen to me. I and my sister don't even talk about it to this day. Something changed between us. I could feel it after that day. Every summer for the past few years, a group of friends and I have traveled from our homes in Liverpool, in the UK, to Dumfries and Galloway in Scotland. Dumfries and Galloway is the home of the largest continuous forest in the whole of the United Kingdom, Galloway Forest Park. It's about as wild as it gets for the UK, with some parts of the woods being so dense and overgrown that it's clear no one has stepped foot in them for hundreds, possibly thousands of years. Our yearly visits brought us peace, clarity, and respect for nature. But last year's trip ended in one of the most horrifying and distressing incidents of my entire life. One that completely changed the way I see the world and the way I consider the human mind. Year in, year out, we take an overnight coach up across the border, then hike out to a place called Loch Eber. The Loch is a private fishing lake, supposedly reserved for members of a local fishing club who ensure the waters are chock full of fish for them to catch, which makes it oh so easy for us to pull a quick in and out raid to catch enough of the smaller rough fish for dinner. I'm serious, 45 minutes and we're golden, and take it from any fisherman, that is lightning speed for a half decent catch. But last year we decided we were tired of the same old digs and set our gazes on a different part of the map. According to a map that we had found, it told us that there was a similarly deep loch about 30 miles east known as Loch D. We figured it would be a perfect fishing spot, and we were right. Sure, it wasn't as quick fire as the private member's lake, but it came with considerably less guilt. Everything was going perfect. That was until the second night, when in the middle of a campfire drinking session, one of my buddies jumped out of his seat and recoiled from the fire. "What the hell is that?" he asked, sort of calmly at first. Nothing more than cautious confusion. "Who's who?" someone replies lazily. "Someone moving through the trees back there." He was pointing into the trees directly behind my back. I actually gave a hoot of sarcastic laughter at first, thinking he was trying to scare us. But the moment it became obvious that he was not messing around, and a jolt of fear went through my freaking face, I leaped out of my seat, spun around, and shined my torch into the darkness. You could feel the tension among us rising as we desperately looked around for who might have been stalking us out here. Torch beams darted across the trees, inspecting every trunk or thicket of the bushes, but there was nothing that we could see, no sign of the person my friend had seen. "Hello?" someone called out, immediately shushed by the rest of us. No one wanted to give away our position, but at the same time, we needed to know if there was someone out there, watching us. But again, there was just silence. "I think you've had a bit too much to drink, mate," I remember saying to the guy who supposedly seen a figure walking through the trees. "I'm fine, I barely touched that bell," I brought. "I swear to God I saw someone just then." "Like who?" someone asked. "Man, woman, young, old, what?" I don't know," he replied shakily. "But they were big. Really big." "The only big thing around here is your bloody imagination, mate. Now go get your head down. It's been a long day." And it had. Thanks to the overnight coach, no one really sleeps on the journey up to Scotland. I mean, they close their eyes, maybe, you know, get a few minutes of sleep, listen to some chill music through their headphones, but they never really sleep. So everyone ends up being pretty wrecked by the end of the first night. The next morning we felt even worse. The first night after such a long journey is usually one where we sleep like the dead. But not that night. None of us could quite relax. Not with the possibility of having someone stalking us in the back of our minds. Thank God we were only planning to fish that day, as we really were not in the mood for anything else, given how bloody exhausted we were. After breakfast, we marched down to the loch with our fishing gear. It's a gorgeous area, a crisp, blue lake ringed by hills. It's not unusual to get some really nice, sunny days up in Scotland too, especially during the summer. But that day, the sky was horrible, grimy gray, like the sun had barely risen at all. I was tired, half-soaked from the drizzle, and barely even excited to be fishing for my dinner. I actually hoped that something exciting would happen. And for my sins, my wish came true. "Look," one of us shouted. "Over there, on the other side of the loch. Jesus Christ, can you see that thing?" It was the same lad that had seen someone or something walking through the trees. "Where?" We were terrified. One sighting could have been his eyes playing tricks on him. Another couldn't possibly be a mistake, right? "There," he said, pointing. "Just on the other side. It came out of the trees for a moment, then disappeared again. Please tell me you saw that." "Mate, just calm down. It's probably just..." "I know what I saw, and we need to get the hell out of these bloody woods right now," he said, grabbing up his gear in a panic. I remember him rushing off back to camp, one of the lads following him, still trying to calm him down. But it was impossible. He was manic, scared half to death by whatever he had briefly seen. I asked the other boys if they had seen anything. Each shook their head. None had any idea what he was talking about, but that didn't mean they weren't just as freaked out over his outburst. We were supposed to stay for 7 full nights, but that second one was our last. We managed to talk the lad who was panicking down, convincing him to stay a few nights more at the very least. We'd come all this way, and I wasn't about to let us just leave because we were a wee scared of something. But it didn't end there. In the middle of the night, the lad had been seeing something burst out of his tent, waking up each of us before saying, "Can you hear that?" There was silence. Dead silence. I mean, I strained my ears trying to hear what he could hear, but there was nothing. He was scratching at his own ears, gritting his teeth, rocking back and forth in the dirt. It's like this sound was completely overwhelming him. That's the exact moment I realized that maybe something was happening. Maybe there was no monster, maybe it was all in his head. He was experiencing a psychotic break, and it was all in his head.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.